holding on the last line of Hayim Beis. Mishnah said, Ezer Katan, we said what's considered a child, or doesn't have to do with the other ego. Koshen Yochaluk of Aksefa Shalavu, we said that Bishamai said when he can't go on his father's shoulders, up from Yerushalayim to the Hanabayas, and Bishamai said if he can't hold his father's hand and walk from Yerushalayim to the Hanabayas. Which we're not, again, we're not necessarily talking about that the child himself has a chiyuv, but the child doesn't really have a chiyuv in mitzvahs at all. We're talking about when his father would have the chiyuv to bring him. The master thought of Zera. So Zera asked a question like this. We're talking about, the Mishnah is saying that he has to be able to go from Yerushalayim to the Harabayim, either on his father's shoulders or walking with his father, as the case may be. Ad hocha man afye, who actually brought him to Yerushalayim? Meaning, so Rashi explains the point of the question is like this. We're assuming that the mother did not come up to Yerushalayim, because she doesn't have a mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. We would assume she didn't come up. So then, he had to have been able to come, once he's able to leave his mother, he's already old enough to be holding his father's hand and be able to walk. But we're saying that below a certain age, he's putter, because he can't go from Yerushalayim to the Hanabayas, implying he's already in Yerushalayim. How did he get there, if not that he walked?
The question is really, does he have to go from his home to Harabayis, or does he have to go to Yerushalayim?
The question is that he's chayev repater when he's able to go from Yerushalayim, to the Harabayis, but how did he get to Yerushalayim in the first place? If his mother is not bringing him, then how did he get? Then, why are we focusing on him getting from Yerushalayim to the Harabayis? Because we would assume that the mother didn't come. So why are we focusing on whether he's able to get the short distance from Yerushalayim to the Harabayis? We should be focusing on how is he able to whether he is able to get from his house to Yerushalayim. Yeah. Yeah. You're assuming Abaya said that the mother didn't come because he's not chayev in Aliyah L'Regel. True, but remember we said there's more than just Aliyah L'Regel. There's also the mitzvah of Simcha. Ad hacha, up until Yerushalayim, the mechayev ime b'simcha, that his mother is chayev in the mitzvah of Simcha, and we said that Simcha means eating from the meat of the korban shlamim. I see seime, so his mother brings him. So yes, that's how we're not focusing on whether he's able to get to Yerushalayim, because yes, his mother is bringing him because she's going to be there in order to be able to eat from the shlamim. Mikan ve'elach, after that, im yachol lalas v'lechas v'yadu shal aviv mishalayim l'harabayis, if he's able from there, from Yerushalayim, to go and hold his father's hands, according to Basilol, and then go up from Yerushalayim to Harabayis, chayiv v'iloi potter, and if not, then he would be potter. So he is in Yerushalayim already. That's why the Mishnah is focusing on him getting from Yerushalayim to the Harabayis. We're assuming he's in Yerushalayim already, because since his mother is going to be there for the Simcha, then necessarily she'll have brought the children. From their home to Yerushalayim. Now Tosfos points out, I mean, we're saying over here, the Gemara is using the expression that the woman is chayev in Simcha. Tosfos says that really, not necessarily. What we mean is, what we mean is really that her husband has the responsibility of making her b'simcha. We talk about the idea of nice clothes, etc. So not necessarily is it that she personally has the chiyuv, but since her husband has to be able to be mesameach her, then she comes there in order to facilitate that.
But again, what's the relevance of her chiyuv when we're asking a question about the child?
But that's the point. In other words, we're asking, why didn't we talk about how the child is getting to Yerushalayim? And the answer is because if the child is getting to Yerushalayim, that's a given. He could be taken in a baby carriage, as far as we're concerned. The question is, how is he getting to the Harabayis, where his mother is not chayiv in that part? She's only chayiv in the Simcha, or not even chayiv in the Simcha, but she facilitates her husband being able to be mesameach her, and therefore she comes to Yerushalayim for that.
And that's the determinance of whether or not he's eating.
Once he's able to come from Yerushalayim to the Harabayis, right. Heshiv Rebbe, so Rebbe asks, Heshiv Rebbe Tachas Beis Hillel. So Rebbe asked the question in the name of Beis Hillel. This is already long after the Machlokas of Beis Hillel B'Shamah. This is long after the Halacha was determined. But Rebbe is speaking on, sort of on behalf of Beis Hillel and asking, how could Beis Shammai say that the kid is already chayiv in Aliyah L'Regel once he's able to ride on his father's shoulders? Let's look at a pasuk. V'chana loy Allah. So the pasuk says in Shmuel that after Chana gave birth to Shmuel, she did not go up on Aliyah L'Regel. She didn't go up to Shiloh. even though every time before that she'd been going. Ki omra le'isha, she says to her husband, Adi gomel hanar Rabbi Yosef, let's wait till the child is weaned, and then I'll bring him. Now we have to consider, in those days, kids were weaned at 2 years old. Now, before that age, before 2 years old, already Shmuel is big enough to be able to ride on his father's shoulders. So why is she saying, wait, he doesn't yet have to be Ola Lugagel until he doesn't have to be Ola Lugagel until he's weaned? Why not? He's already, according to Bishama, he should be already going at that 6 months, a year, whatever, when he's old enough to be able to hold his head up and ride on his father's shoulders. Now, you know, the Gemara could have answered very simply. The Gemara could have answered that in those, you know, the whole thing of bringing the child is a matter of chinuch. Maybe at that time they hadn't made this takana yet that you have to be mechanech the kid. Okay, so one possibility is either Rebbe knows for a fact that by that time, that by Arkana and Chana's time, they had already made this takana of chinuch, or the other way of looking at it is even if they hadn't officially made the takana yet, you know, come on, a tzaddik like Elkanah is not going to, you know, they're not going to just be careless about the matter. He'll try to do the mitzvah in the best possible way even before there's a formal takana that he has to.
But also another factor that once you promise to bring the dedicated once he's there,
Well, that's true. No, but because she still could have said, no, because not necessarily. She didn't say that as soon as I bring him, he has to stay there. There's a certain age when I'm going to bring him, when he's going to, and then he's going to stay there forever. It's not like she couldn't come now, She's saying I can't come. She's saying I'm still nursing him, and he doesn't have to go up now. But why not? According to Bishama, he does have to go up now. Amalei Avua. So his father, Rebbe's father, answers him. Or on the side here, it says that maybe Abaye answered. Well, according to your logic, you have to ask, we just said that the mother comes to your shalayim because she's chayiv in simcha. Nu, what's Chana doing staying home in Har Ephraim if she also is chayiv in simcha? Fine, even if Shmuel is not chayiv in Aliyah L'Regel yet, even according to Beis Hillel, in other words, why is Chana saying, let me stay home with him? Shouldn't she be coming in order to eat from the shlamim?
Maybe she cannot because she has to take care of it.
But that's the question. Why not? Just like in a normal situation, we're saying at the top, Reb Zera is, Abaya actually, is saying at the top of the Amud, that in a normal situation, the whole family goes up to your shlamim for Aliyah L'Regel. The father then, together with the older children, goes up actually into the Azara, into the Hanabais, into the Azara, and brings their korbanos. And the mother and the little kids stay back in their lodgings in your shlamim. Same thing over here. The whole family should be going up. Kana and Chana and Shmuel and Pnina and her kids, of course. They'll all be going up. Chana will stay in their tent or their hotel or whatever in the city of Shiloh. And Elkanah will go to the Mishkan. Incidentally, by the way, this Gemara evidently is assuming that the dinim of Aliyah L'Regel in Mishkan Shiloh were actually the same as in the permanent Beis Mikdash, that you have the same mitzvah of Shalosh Pamim Hashana to come to Mishkan Shiloh. Not everybody agrees with that, actually. Well, the pasuk starts off by describing the situation over there, how it came that Chana was davening for a child, that the pasuk says over there that Elkanah used to come mi yamim yamima, which in many places, the word miyomim yamimah means from year to year. We say every day in Rabbeinu Tam's Tefillah, Shamata as a chokah as like the miyomim yamimah means every year you celebrate Pesach, not three times a year. I think there are some mafoshim who say that it means that they actually weren't chayev in Aliyah L'Regel. Technically, Elkanah made a point of coming there every so often, but it wasn't an actual official chiyuv. But evidently, our Gemara is assuming that it was the actual official chiyuv of Aliyah L'Regel. Ella, so what do you have to say? Chana mafan kusi yaseretz achazi bebe Shmuel. Evidently, Chana saw that Shmuel is extra delicate, like we said yesterday, mafunach. He's extra delicate. V'chasha bebe Shmuel l'chol shadurucha. So she's concerned that he may have a hard time he may get sick on the trip. So yes, ordinarily, if Shmuel was a perfectly healthy child, sure, she would have been coming all this time, and then, okay, maybe he wouldn't be chayiv in Aliyah L'Regel yet, according to Beis Hillel, according to Beis Shammai, he would, but at least she'd have come up to Shiloh. The reason she's staying behind Bechlal and telling Elkanah, let me wait until he's weaned, is partially so he should be strong enough to be able to make the trip. So nothing to do with, so you can't prove anything from that one way or the other about whether he's chayiv, because even an adult who's a chayla is potter. Next, Boy Rav Shimon, Ben Lakish, it says here on the side, that the Rish Lakish asked a question like this. Katan Chigir L'Divrei Beis Shammai, what about if you have a child who's lame? Then according to Beis Shammai, so we're saying that Beis Shammai is saying that a healthy child, once he's able to ride on his father's shoulders, it's already time for chinuch, he has to start being mechanechim, because eventually when he gets to be bar mitzvah, he's going to have the actual chi of midaraisa to be over l'regel. Now suppose he's lame. When he gets older, the pashtus, we're assuming at this point, that he's still going to be lame, he's still going to be potter from aliyah l'regel, maybe then in that case, there's no reason to be mechanechim. Maybe in that case, you should be potter. The whole idea of chinuch is you mechanech the child in mitzvahs in order that he should continue doing them, he should be used to doing them when he's older. In this case, he's going to be potter when he's older anyway. So maybe there's no reason to be mechanechim. A while back on one of the Living Torah videos, there was something like that where Rabbi Lau was at Dollars and then started talking with the Rebbe about whether kids have a chiyuv of Mesidus Nefesh al Kiddush Hashem. And one point Rabbi Lau made over there is, you know, if you're talking about the normal idea of chinuch is in order that he'll be used to doing it when he's older, in this case, obviously we're talking about a one-time thing. Is there necessarily a thing with it? But anyways.
He was the person of choice after that because that's the situation that he was himself.
True. Indeed. Yep. But he wrote a whole sefer about it. He wrote a whole chapter in a sefer halacha about it. He was discussing it for a few minutes there with the Rebbe. Yes. Anyway, so the same thing over here then. So if he's lame, the similar Jewish name, or blind child according to either with Shammai Basilil. So again, maybe he's big enough now, even though he's blind, he's able to hold his father's hand and walk, because his father will guide him. But according to both of them, Mahu, what would be the din? Is he chayiv or not? Because maybe on the one hand he should be chayev, because you know we're not going to start making distinctions between children once we make the takana that you have to be mechanech them, they have to be mechanech them, or maybe not, he's not going to need it when he's older.
What's that off about the chigir?
We said before that a chigir is potter.
Because
because we said regalim, that he has to be able to walk on both his feet. Yeah.
That's the
law. Yeah. What's the case we're talking about over here? Ilema b'chigir she'en yachal le'spashet. Are we talking about where he's lame and he's never going to get better? Or he's permanently blind, he's never going to be able to see again. Well, then of course he's potter. Even if he was an adult and he was like that, of course he'd be potter. How much more so a child? There's no reason to think that, again, if the whole idea of chinuch is to prepare him for adulthood, he's not going to be chayev when he's an adult. So what's the question? The answer is, okay, how about we can ask the case? What if he is lame now, but he's going to be able to, that later on, they'll be able to heal him. It's curable. They'll be able to do an operation, and he'll be able to walk. So he will be able to be healed. Or he's blind, but he will be able to be cured and be able to see again.
And they know this, or they're praying all the time?
No, they know this, the pastors. There are curable conditions. So then the question becomes my. On the one hand, you could say right now the situation he's in, he's potter. On the other hand, they will be able to fix it by the time he's by mitzvah, and then he'd be chayev.
When they fix it,
yeah. Which actually, that's the question. That's actually the question. Mefarshim point out, actually, that are we talking about that he'll be able to be healed sometime before his bar mitzvah, or is it even if we say maybe they won't be able to operate until after he's bar mitzvah, but at least there'll be some time in his life when he will be able what's the case the Gemara is talking about right here? Anyway, my, so Amar Abaya, the rule is like this, Abaya says. Any case when an adult would be chayev in the mitzvah deraisa, so then when it comes to a cotton, midrabanan, we have to be mechanechim. But in any case where an adult is potter in something midrabanan, midrabanan, cotton nami potter. And midrabanan, we also say the cotton is potter. Meaning, in other words, in this case, If we have a person who right now is lame, yes, maybe they'll be able to do an operation. They may be able to do an operation and fix his leg right now. It doesn't have to be an operation. He broke his leg, and in 6 weeks from now it'll be healed. Whatever. But the point is, right now he's potter because right now he's lame. Next yomtiv he'll be chayev maybe. So the same thing as far as the child. Right now he's lame, right now he's blind. They'll be able to fix it later. Good. When they're able to fix it, then we start being mechanechim. Right now he's potter. And that's the halacha. Mishnah continues. Bishama I'm a marihia shtek hesef chola. That we had a machlokas bishama b'silo. We said there's two karbanas you're supposed to be bringing. The oila suhiya, the carbon oila in honor of the fact that you're seeing and being seen by Hashem. Close the door, please. And a shama chagiga, a shlomim that you're bringing in honor of the yomtiv, which you eat the meat of it. You're also being mekayim the mitzvah of simcha with that. But you're bringing the shlomim as part of the when the Torah says, we'll learn in a few days when the Torah says that chagoyim chag that you're supposed to celebrate a yomtiv, it means that you're supposed to bring a korban chagiga. Well, that on the test of yud. So we had a machlokas with shama b'silul about the minimum values of these two korbanos. The Shammai had said that the carbon oil has to be worth at least two coins, and the at least two ma, and the shlomim has to be worth at least one, and Basilo said the other way around. Which, as we said the other day, and Tosis pointed out over here, Midaraisa, there's no shir. Eilu dvorim shein lam shir, apayir v'abikurim bar ha'aryin. It's midrabanan, this whole concept. So, Tanarabanan, Beshama Evim Ra'iyah Shtei Kesef HaChagigah Ma Kesef. Why? Why do they say that Ra'iyah should be worth more? Shor Ra'iyah Oila Kulul Gavaya, because the carbon Ra'iyah, the Oila Ra'iyah, goes completely up to Hashem. It's a carbon Oila, it's burnt completely on the Mizbeach. Mashenkin B'Chagigah, as opposed to the Chagigah. So therefore, the Oila is more important. It should cost more. But Oid, and another reason why we should say the Oila is more important, Matsino Ba'atzeres Shor Ribba B'Henakas B'Oilas Yosem B'Shlamim. We find on Shavuos, The on all Yom Tovim, the Torah tells us to bring a korban musaf. On Shavuos, there's actually two sets of korbanos. There's the korban musaf for Shavuos, and then there's the shtei alechem and the korbanos that come along with it. There you have uniquely, besides most of the korbanos of most Yom Tovim, the musafim of all the other Yom Tovim are mostly olus, and then one chatas. And on Shavuos, besides that, you have two shlomim, two sheep for shlomim that are brought together with the shtei alechem. They're actually, it's a special kind of shlomim. We say in davening every morning, zivchi shalmei tzibru v'ashamos. They're kachim rather than a regular shlomim, which is kachim kalim, but still they're called shlomim. And we see shiruv behenakasta ba'olus yosiv v'shlomim. The Torah tells you to bring more olus than shlomim. You have with the shtei alechem alone, you have seven. You have 10 animals as olus, 7 sheep, one bull and 2 rams, and then you have the 2 sheep for a shlomim. So you have 10 versus 2. So you see, an ola is much more important than a shlomim.
7
sheep, one bull and 2 rams. So 10 olas, plus you have a sor lachatas, and that's why in Shavuos, in our nusach, we say shnei zirim lachaper.
As opposed to
the belt, which says if it's sorry the chaper that we do on all the other yomtovim, and then we have the two kvasim for shlomim. We see it's 10 to 2. That's bishamay. Over silul, I mean, how ra'iyah ma kesef chagigah shtei kesef. Bishilul says the other way around. The oilas ra'iyah only has to be worth one ma. The chagigah has to be worth at least two. What? Why is the chagigah more important? First of all, shachagigah yeshna lifnei adibur. First of all, because the chagigah existed before matan Torah. As we're going to discuss soon, that on the day before Matan Torah, or most before, I should say, it was the day before Matan Torah anyway, it's described at the end of Parashas Mishpatim. It says, Vayishlach es narei b'nei Yisrael, the Moshe sent the young Jewish people, which means the Bechorim, because it was before the Chatei Egel, the Bechorim were doing the Avodah, and they brought Shlomim over there, which we'll discuss soon, that those Shlomim are a form of Chagigah. No, this is actually before the Aseret HaDibros. That's the thing. Rashi points out this is written in the Torah after the Aseret HaDibros. The Aseret HaDibros are given in Parashas Yisrael. This is at the end of Parashas Mishpatim. But Rashi says, "Ein muktam u'ocha b'Torah," the events that it described in the last chapter of Mishpatim actually happened during the couple of days before Matan Torah.
Torah was not written.
Because the Torah is not written chronologically. Right. Not all Mepharshim agree with that. There are Mepharshim who actually argue that it is written chronologically. I think the Ramban says that way, for example. How would he understand our Gemara? So one. First of all, again, when you're teaching Pshat and Pasuk, it doesn't always have to fit with what the Gemara darshins from it. But besides that, also Mepharshim says, like the Tosfos Rid says, and others say that when we say here that it was Lifnei HaDibur, can also mean before the Eishter gave Moshe all the details of the Korbanos, which are in Parshas Vayikra, which, as we're going to see soon, there's an opinion that those weren't given until sometime after Matan Torah. Anyway, so the Chagigah already existed at that time.
Mashenkin Beriah, as opposed to true, an Ola existed also. They brought Olas and Shlomim, but the Ola there was not an Olas Re'iyah. It was a different kind of Ola. An Olas Re'iyah is when you come on the Shalosh Regalim. This wasn't just one of the Shalosh Regalim. I mean, Shavuos is, but it was the day before Shavuos. So they weren't bringing it as an Olas Re'iyah, but a Chagiga existed at that time. We're going to go through the whole discussion and see what Betzillo means by saying that those Shlomim were considered a Chagiga. But Oid, and also, Betzillo says, here's another proof, Matzinu b'Nesiim, Shiribu b'an Akasa b'Shlomim, Yosem b'Olas. We see by the Karbonis of the Nesiim, the ones that we read on Chanukah, and then during the first days of Nisan, that they brought more Shlomim than Olas. What is it? They brought Kolabaka La'ola at 12 oxen, 12 rams, and then 12 oxen, 12 rams, and then 12 sheep for an Ola. And then for Shlomim, they had, what was it? Then you had 36 animals for Olus, and then you had 60 animals for Shlomim. Because each one, actually you had 180 for Shlomim. Elim Shishim, Akhudim Shishim, Kvasim Nishana Shishim, for each kind of animal, you had 60 Shlomim. Five for each of the Nesim. Five goats, five sheep, and five rams. So you see, there were a lot more Olus than Shlomim. A lot more Shlomim than Olas. So therefore you see that Shlomim is more important. The Gemara asked Betzillo. No, altogether the number of Olas was 36. Three for each Nasi. Each Nasi brought 3 Olas and 15 Shlomim.
But the number of behemoths per Ola as compared to the number of behemoths per Shlomim was in favor of...
No, Shnei Masa Parim means altogether across all the Nasiim. Each Nasi brought Parachod Ayel Achod Keves Ben Parachod Ayel Achod Keves Echad Ben Shnasi Ola. So each Nasi brought one of each of kind of animal for an Ola, and then he brought 5 of each kind of animal for a Shlomim. So there's 5 times as many Shlomim.
So what?
Who says worth less? I don't know. Or Basil my time allow me to Bishama. So the question is, why does Basil say like Bishama? Okay, they have proofs of their own. What are they doing with Bishama as proofs? They answer like this. You're saying that the Kohen Re'iyah is more important because it goes completely up to the Eibishter. On the contrary, for that reason alone, you should say the Chagiga is more important. The Isbashtei Achilas, because there's 2 different eatings that have to be done with it. The Mizbeach is eating part of it, and the Kohenim and the owners have to eat some of it. So not to say it's more important. I mean, one's kachim, one's kachim kalim, but still, in terms of the size of it, logically the shlomim ought to be bigger than the ola. And you want to say that we should learn from the korbanos of Shavuos? Can't. Done in korban yachid with korban yachid. You should better learn a korban of an individual from a korban of an individual. The nesiim were all individuals. Yeah, each one is bringing on behalf of their shevet, but it's still private korbanos. The Chagiga is also a private korban. Again, you know, it's brought the whole Jewish people all together. Tosfos points out, in a certain sense, the Chagiga is called the korban tzibur, but only because it's brought by the whole tzibur at the same time. But it's still every individual brings their own Chagiga. Vein donen, korban yachid, the korban tzibur. You can't learn a korban yachid, the Chagiga, from a korban tzibur, the korbanos of Shavuos, which are actually brought on behalf of the whole tzibur and brought from the funds of the tzibur and so forth. So there's no comparison. Oh, Beth Shammai, my time allow me to Bethillel. Okay, why doesn't Beth Shammai say like Bethillel? In other words, what do they do with Bethillel's proofs? They say like this. You're saying the Chagiga is more important because Chagigas were brought even before Matan Torah. So what? There was an Oilas Re'iyah also before Matan Torah. There was an Oilas there also. And Beth Shammai learns, as we're going to go through soon, that it was actually an Oilas Re'iyah. It wasn't Stam and Oilas, it was actually an Oilas Re'iyah.
No.
We're talking about this one that they brought on Erev Shavuos that they brought the day before Matan Torah was an Olas Re'iyah. Why? We'll see soon. It was an Olas Re'iyah because what's the idea of an Olas Re'iyah? You're bringing an Ola in honor of the fact that you're getting to see the Eibishter's presence, Kaviyachol, and then he's seeing you. Well, very well. That's what happened by Matan Torah. Ritzinenu l'rusas malkenu v'yachzuras elekim. So sure, that Shammai is saying, if they brought an Ola, then absolutely, there's every good reason to call that an Ola Sriya. Beis Hillel actually might counter. Actually, we're going to see soon. Was this Oila? Was it an Oila Sri'iya or was it an Oila Tamid? We're going to get into soon. Was it the very first Tamid that was ever brought, or was it an Oila Sri'iya in honor of seeing Hashem's presence? Actually, it's kind of interesting that neither of them points out. I mean, we have the halacha that a ger has to bring a korban. We learn that from the events by Matan Torah that they all had to bring a korban. And that the pashtus, we would assume that's the korban of a ger. It's neither a tamid nor an oila sri'iya. We would assume it's neither an oila tamid nor an oila sri'iya, but the oila of a ger. Apparently, the Gemara is not taking that over here. I don't know. And so the fact that you're saying that the chagiga is more important, no, the ria is just as important. Both of them were brought before Matan Torah. Or the kamet neilaf minasim, and you want to say as far as learning from the nesim, no, donin davar hanoeg l'doris midavar hanoeg l'doris. Logically, we should learn something that continues for all time, such as an ola sriya, from something that continues for all time. Which is the korbanos of Shavuos. Don't learn from something that's a one-time thing that's never repeated. The korbanos of the Nesiim never again. It never again happened. It's a one-time thing. No, you can't learn from that. No, that's not really the same thing. But yeah, I mean, in general, where possible, we try to learn from korbanos that, you know, korbanos that one-off korbanos like this, like the korbanos of the Nesiim. I mean, there's lots of exceptions with those. We find they brought k'tordos, even though usually a yachid can't bring k'tordos. They brought Ephraim's korban on Shabbos, even though you don't usually bring a yachid's korban on Shabbos, etc. So the Shem is saying, come on, you can't really use those as a precedent for anything. So now, going back to Beis Hillel, they're saying that there was a chagiga before Matan Torah, the Sivayus b'chuzavachim shlomim, so, re'iya nami. So there was an oilus re'iya also, oksiv v'yalu oilus. The same pasuk, it says, the whole pasuk goes, v'yishlachas nari b'nei Israel, he sent the young Jewish people, v'yalu oilus, and they offered oilus, v'yiz b'chuzavachim shlomim l'Hashem, and they offered korbanos of shlomim to Hashem, parim, bulls. We'll have on the base at the very end how we parse the pasuk exactly. But the point is, there was both an oila and a shlomim. Why is Beis Hillel saying there was only a chagiga and no oila sriya? The answer is kasabri Beis Hillel oila sheikrivu Yisrael b'midbar oila tamid havoi, because they hold that this oila that the Jewish people brought in the desert at this time was an oila tamid. It was there's a requirement to bring a korban oila every day, well, twice a day, once in the morning, once in the afternoon. This was the one. This was the first carbon tumid that they were told to bring. So it wasn't an Oilus Re'iya, it was an Oilus Tumid. There was an Oilus Tumid. That's what we're going to figure out now. Or was Shammai Sabri Oilus Re'iya, Yisrael Amidbar, Oilus Re'iya Avoy? Where did the Shammai say that it was an Oilus Re'iya with an honor of the fact that Yachzu HaSedekim, that they're getting to see, that they got to see the Eibishter's presence? What type of Oilus was? Now, I mean, you know, when you think about it, we say every day in Vaidaber, Oilas Tomid or Asuya Bahar Sinai. So what does that mean? It certainly sounds like they were bringing an Oilas Tomid right there at Har Sinai. That's part of what we're going to discuss over here. Does it mean exactly that the Oilas Tomid was first initiated at Har Sinai before Matan Torah, or does it just mean that they started bringing it during the year that they were staying at Har Sinai, because they stayed there for almost a year, or does it mean, Rashi on the Pasuk says, that the Bechlal, it doesn't mean necessarily they brought an Oilas Tomid at Har Sinai. It means that we learn a particular detail of the dinim of an Oilas Tomid from the carbon that they brought before Matan Torah. The fact that the pasuk says over there, "Vayosem ba'agones," that Moshe took the blood and put it. Tosfos quotes it on Amud Beis from Rashi on Chumash, which is very rare actually. Tosfos on Gemara usually don't quote Rashi on Chumash, but here they do. They call it Numukei Rashi. The pasuk says over there that Moshe took the blood of the korbanos, "Vayosem ba'agones," and he put them in basins and they sprinkled it. So we learn from that. Rashi says on pasuk, "Olas Tamid Ha'asuya Ba'ar Sinai." We learn from that, just like there, you had to use basins to catch the blood. So it is by the korban tamid that they bring twice a day, and every other korban that the blood has to be caught in a basin before it's sprinkled on the bench.
In the Mishkan basin,
whatever. Does that mean
they were bringing this meeting at that point on, or just once on the?
That's what we're going to discuss. Omer Abaya. Beit Shammai, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shmuel, Kulu Svirulahu, Ola Sheikhribi Yisrael, Bamidba, Ola Sri Yavoi, Beit Shammai and Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Shmuel, all of them hold that this Ola that they brought on the day before Matan Torah was an Ola Sri Yavoi. Where then we have Rabbi Hillel, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Yisrael Glili. They all hold. So we have three opinions lined up on each side, whether it was an Olas Re'iyah or an Olas Tamid. And again, the point of it is, if we say it was an Olas Re'iyah, then one of Beis Hillel's proofs falls off. You can't say that a Chagiga is more special because it existed before Matan Torah. So did the Olas Re'iyah. Then you only have their second proof about the Nesi'im. Well, I mean, okay, you know, the fact that it says Ola before the Shlomim by Yalu Ola stays before Shlomim, maybe, okay. So, Beis Shammai holds on Moran. Where do we see the Beis Shammai? Well, we just said that Beis Shammai holds that there was both an Ola Sriya and a Chagiga over there because they say that the Ola was an Ola Sriya. Rabbi Shmuel, where do we see that Rabbi Shmuel says such a thing? Netanya, Rabbi Shmuel Leimer, Klolois Nemru B'Sinai, with many mitzvahs, there are only the generality of it was said at Har Sinai. Uprotis Ba'Oyel Moed, and the details were told to Moshe in Oyel Moed after the Mishkan was set up. So, for example, Rashi says one of them is as far as the Dinim of Korbanos. Right after Matan Torah, at the very end of Parashas Yisro, it says there are a couple of the basic dinim of Korbanos. They have to build Mizbeach Adama Tassili, Mizbeach Torah, Vaselasecha, Vaschlamecha. So it says you have to bring Olas and Shlomim. But it doesn't give any detail. What do you do with the Ola? What do you do differently with the Shlomim? Are there any, you know, what has to be done with the blood, etc.? There are no details. It just says a generality. Later on, So in other words, according to Rabbi Shmuel, from Matan Torah until the Mishkan was set up, when by Yikra Moshe, by Dabra El Hashem, and Hashem started giving Moshe all the details of Korbanos, during all that time, the rules of the Korbanos were not necessarily the same as they were later. The details were only given in the Mishkan. And so it is with many other dinim. Rabbi Akiva, I mean, no. Kolot uprotus nemer b'Sinai. The generalities and all the specifics were all said at Har Sinai. This is the famous thing that Rashi says at the beginning of Parshas Bahar. Mayin in Shmita Eitzel Har Sinai. That's just like by Shmita, it says all the details in the Torah, and it says that it was said by Har Sinai. So it is with all the other mitzvahs. That's according to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Shmuel would disagree with that. The Nishnu b'Oyel Moed, and then it was repeated again in Oyel Moed when in Parshas VaYikra and then the following Parshas, the Eibusha told the Tigla Moshe all over again. The Nishtavshu b'Arvus Moyev, and then they repeated a third time in Arvus Moyev during the last week. The Gemara discusses it in Sota for one thing because there was a bris made in each one. We said at the end of last week's parasha, the Levada Bris, the Shekhar Asitim Bechorah, that there's the Bris that was made at the end of Moshe's life with the Torah and everything, and then the previous Bris at the end of Parashas Bechorah, also with the Torah. So it had to be repeated each time together with the Bris. There was a Bris made in Matan Torah, another one in Oyel Moed, another one in Arvus Moed.
The Bris means
the covenant. No, the covenant. The covenant that the Eibishter made a covenant with the Jewish people that they were going to accept these mitzvahs and keep them. Yeah.
The Yidden were asked actually people that they would keep these mitzvahs.
I don't know if they were actually asked, but yeah.
Then
maybe, no, okay, I guess. I don't know, the Gemara discusses in Sota the details. Really, over here, it's not for our purposes of our Gemara, it's not really relevant to mention that third time, and Rabbi Shmuel agrees the Torah was repeated in Arvus Moed. It's more relevant to in Sota. We're just quoting the whole Braisa over here. The Gemara then goes into the details over there of the Brisis and the number of Brisis and so forth, yeah. Anyway, so again, according to Rabbi Shmuel, so the point is like this. According to Rabbi Shmuel, yes, there was a change in these halachas. After Matan Torah, there's a certain way that the Eibusha told Moshe that Korbanos, that the Eibusha just told Moshe bring Korbanos. He didn't go into any details. So therefore, during that year, from the next 10 months, from then till the Mishkan was set up, they could do whatever they wanted within reason. And only after Oyel Moed are there now rules. There's certain things that you have to do with the carbon. Now we have to consider, the Gemara says. What's the proof from that Rabbi Shmuel says that the carbon, this carbon, the day before Matan Torah, what's the proof that it was not an Olas Tamid but rather an Olas Re'iyah? Because if you're going to say that this Olas was an Olas Tamid, meaning it had to continue from there every day. Well, then how do you have a case where how could you say that beforehand, for a while there, this korban does not require the skin to be stripped off and it to be cut up in pieces, like you do to a korban ola, or the soap boy has shifted into rach, and later on it does. The dinim, that the skin has to be taken off and that it has to be cut up into pieces, is all among the details that are in Parshas Vayikra. According to Rabbi Shmuel, nobody knew of these until the Eved started telling them to Moshe and Rosh Chodesh Nissen. So then, in that case, so what? So during those 10 months, every day they bring a korban tamid, and they're doing one procedure, and all of a sudden comes Rosh Chodesh Nissen, and there's a whole new procedure. It doesn't make sense. If they're bringing an ola, if they're bringing a korban that's supposed to be, this is a fixed chayv for all time, then it should always be brought the same way. Evidently, then, it has to have been an ola sriya. So it's an ola sriya, fine. An ola sriya is a once-in-a-while thing. You could say, I mean, this wasn't even really, so to speak, a real ola sriya, because, you know, it's an honor of seeing the Shechina, but it's not, you know, the official ola sriya was established as being on the Shalosh Regalim. Fun. Next time, by the time they had to bring the next one, already the details have been given, and they do the Hefshet for Nitzruach and so forth. So therefore, that seems to prove that Rabbi Shmuel holds that it was an Ola, that was an Ola Sriya. Yeah. Same as Bet Shammai. Next, Rabbi Lazar, how do we know that he says that? The Tanya, the Pasuk says, Olas Komed HaAsuriya Bahar Sinai. So what does that mean? Rabbi Lazar Omer, Maaseh Nemar B'Sinai, the details of how to bring the Korban Tamid were said at Sinai. He asked Malay Korba, but the actual Korban Tumid itself was not brought at Har Sinai. So if it wasn't, we said that the Bechorim brought an Ola. What was that Ola? Must have been an Ola Sriya. Rabbi Akiva, I'm a Korba, Shul Le Pastor. Rabbi Akiva says no. What the Pasuk means is they started bringing the Korban Tumid at that time, and they never stopped throughout the 40 years. Ela, Mani, Makayim, so Rabbi Akiva continues, so what would I do with the Pasuk in Amos, Hazvachim, Umincha, Yigashim, Liba, Midra, Abayim, Shana, Beis Yisrael? The Navi says, in Hashem's name to the Jewish people, did you then bring me korbanos and a korban mincha in the desert for the 40 years, Beis Yisrael? So according to Rabbi Lazar, we understand it. So according to Rabbi Lazar, They brought that one-time korban the day before Matan Torah. After that, I mean, they brought the miluim, whatever, the various korbanos that are explicitly described in the Torah. That's it. Once afterwards, either the Chet Ha'egel or the Chet Ha'meraglim, the Eibishter was upset with them, and from then on, throughout the rest of the 40 years, they did not bring korbanos. According to Rabbi Lazar, we understand that. Rabbi Akiva is saying, what do I do with that pasuk? According to me, that they continued bringing the korban tamid all those years. It means Shifta, Shalevi, Shalei Avda, but it's not a Heini Kruvoi. So it means the Shevet Levi, who are the ones who are the only ones who didn't succumb, who didn't serve Avda Zara, they're the ones who brought the Korban Tamid every day. Because the Eved wasn't upset with them.
All the others disappeared, but the Shevet Levi.
Well, so what do we mean that Shevet Levi brought it, actually? I mean, when we. So Rashi says, Kruvoi Mishalahem. Rashi says that, like this, the Korban Tamid is really supposed to be brought from the money that's collected from the whole Jewish people, as we learned in Shkalim. You collect the master shekel from everybody and you bring it. Here, where the whole Jewish people were under, were had sinned, and the Eved was upset with them, the Zufim, they were like under a ban of Nidui, then Shevet Levi, on their own, volunteered to raise the money and bring the Korban Tamid all those years, Rabbi Akiva says. But the rest of the Jewish people didn't have anything to do with it.
And Shevet Levi could raise money even from the other Shvatim?
Yeah. I don't know if they raised from the other Shvatim. It may mean that they only raised from their own Shevet. Rashi just says he could rule Mishalahem. They brought it from their own funds, so it sounds like they mean they only fundraise among Shevet Levi. I don't know.
Making difference of
learning
more than
that? What?
Making difference of their bliss or not?
Well, the other people, we learned in Moed Katan that an oral is allowed to send his korban to the Beis Mikdash. He himself, we said yesterday or the day before, is not allowed to come into the Beis Mikdash, according to Rabbi Akiva anyway, but he's allowed to send his korban with somebody else to bring. Yeah, the Jewish people, I mean, well, first of all, many of them were mulim gradually over the years. The ones who were born in the desert never had a Brit Milah, and that's why they had to do a massive one when they came into Eretz Yisrael. But over the years, you still would have had, you know, a smaller number every year, but you would have had people who were gemalot. They could have come into the Beis Mikdash and given over the korban to the kohenim, but they were nazuf, they were under a ban from Hashem, and therefore they didn't. According to Rabbi Akiva, another interesting explanation that I saw is they did raise the money from the whole Jewish people. But what do we mean that the Jewish people weren't involved? We learned back in Tainus about the Ma'amados, that you would have Yisraelim standing there every day, shifts of Yisraelim, to represent the rest of the Jewish people in the bringing of the Korban, because otherwise only the Kohanim and Levim were involved. Here they didn't, because they were Nezufim, because the Eved was upset with them. So even though we learned in Moed Katan that a Nezuf, that a person under Nidri, is also allowed to send his Korbanos to the Beis HaMikdash, in this case, they may have sent them, but they didn't actually participate by actually going into the Mishkan and standing there for Ma'amados.
They were told to stay outside.
I don't know if they were told to, or just they on their own realized that it's the proper thing to do because the Eved is upset with them.
Yeah.
So according to that, they were Zachin for them, but still, it's not the same thing. But that, in other words, according to Rebbe Akiva, that's what it means. When the Pasuk is saying that you didn't bring me Korbanos, it means you, most of you Jewish people, were not involved in the bringing of the Korbanos. So therefore we see from that that Rebbe Lazar evidently holds that they didn't bring a Korban Tavid, because according to him, it was a one-time thing. What kind of one-time thing? It would have had to be an Erlis Riyah. And Beshilul Hodam Moran. How do we know Beshilul says that it was? So that goes through the three that goes through Beis Shammai and the two other Tanoim who hold like that. We have Beis Shammai, Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Lazar, who all hold that it was an Erlas Tomid, not an Erlas Tomid, an Erlas Re'iyah. We brought evidence that each of them holds that way. Now going on to the other side, the other three opinions, Beshilul Hodam Moran. Beshilul says with Erlas Tomid, we established that because they said that unlike Beis Shammai said that the Erla was an Erlas Suya, Beshilul argues and says it was an Erlas Tomid. Rabbi Akiva Nami Hodam Moran. Rabbi Akiva also, we just said that he argued with Rabbi Lazar or Rabbi Eliezer and said that it was an Erlas Tomid. Rabbi Yosi Aglili, where do we know that Rabbi Yosi Aglili says this? Titania, Rabbi Yosi Aglili, Sholosh mitzvah istavi Yisrael ba'alaisim l'regel. Jewish people were given three mitzvahs when they come on Aliyah l'regel. Re'iyah v'chagigah v'simcha. There's a mitzvah of Re'iyah, to come and appear in the Beis HaMikdash and bring an Erlas Re'iyah. Chagigah, to bring the carbon chagigah. And simcha, and to be happy, and to meet with the carbonus. He points out, yesh b'ri'iyah shem b'shtehen. There's something, there's a certain detail about ri'iyah that does not apply, that does not apply to the other two. V'yesh b'chagigah shem b'shtehen, yesh b'simcha shem b'shtehen. Each one of these three mitzvahs has a specific quality, a specific detail that the other ones do not. Namely, yesh b'ri'iyah shem b'shtehen, shari'iyah oyla kula l'gubaya ma'shen kin b'shtehen. You have the mitzvah of Re'iyah is unique among the others because the Korban Re'iyah, the Erlas Re'iyah, is brought completely on the Mizbeach and burnt completely. Mashen can b'shtein, as opposed to the mitzvah of Chagiga and Simcha, if you bring a separate Shalmei Simcha, those are Shlomim. Not all of it gets burnt on the Mizbeach. Most of it gets eaten by the Kohanim and the owners. Yes, but Chagiga Mashen b'shtehen. The Chagiga has a unique feature that the other two don't have. Shachagiga Yeshen l'Pnei Adibur, because the Chagiga existed even before Matan Torah, or as we said before, maybe before the Eved gave the details. Mashen kin b'shtehen, as opposed to the other two things, where evidently he's saying that the Olas Ru'iyah did not exist before Matan Torah, and neither did Shamei Simcha. And yes, b'simcha mashen b'shtehen. So we see, right? So there's our proof. By the way, we see he says the Erlas Re'iyah did not exist before Matan Torah. Obviously, he holds on the Beshilul side of things that it was an Erlas Tomid. Yes, b'simcha mashen b'shtehen, and the mitzvah of simcha has a unique feature that the other two don't. Shas simcha neheges ba'anoshim uvanoshim mashen kin b'shtehen. Mashen b'shtehen, where the mitzvah of simcha applies to both men and women. V'samach da'ato v'secha. Rashi quotes, as opposed to the other two. So you could combine the two. The thing is like this, actually. In a way, you can combine the two. You can bring your Shalmei Chagiga and be Yotze Simcha with it as well. The thing is, a Chagiga, like any Shlomim, can only be eaten for 2 days. The Shnei Yom V'Layla Echad. You have the mitzvah of Simcha throughout the Yom Tov, throughout the 7 days. So therefore, you're going to have to bring more Shlomim than that. We're going to have later on in the Perek, we're going to discuss different cases where you have a larger family, you have a smaller family, whatever. Rashi, by the way, points out over here, you know, so we're saying that Chagiga existed before Matan Torah, and we were saying also before that the Shlomim, Beshilul was saying that the Shlomim they brought before Matan Torah was a Chagiga. Where Bechlal, Rashi says, where Bechlal are we getting this from? You know, we've kind of been skating around this all this time. We said they brought a Shlomim. Why are we assuming it's a Chagiga? Rashi says, because what do we have? Let's go back to when Moshe kept on coming to Paro. Shalach Hasami, send my people, the Abduni. The first time he comes, he says, V'yachogu li b'midbar. Now, we usually, when we learn it, you know, when we learn it with Taich, they should celebrate for me, and they should make a yom tov for me in the desert. But we just said before that v'yachoygu actually means to bring a korban chagiga. When do we find they brought a korban chagiga? Right here. This korban that they brought the day before Mount Tertus, the Plotus brought, that was the korban chagiga that they had told, that Moshe had told Tara a year ago, that this is what we need to go out to the midbar to bring Hashem. So we see that it was a chagiga.
What did they bring before Mount Tertus at all?
So they're bringing Karbanas sitting in.
You
can't, well, you can actually. You can't be Yotze Shama Chagiga before Yom Tov. You can be Yotze Shama Simcha. But you can bring the Shama Simcha the day before Yom Tov and still eat it on the first day of Yom Tov because you can eat it for 2 days.
Usually you do bring it from Yom Tov.
You could, but yeah, okay, in this case. But in this case, they're bringing it the day before Matan Torah. It's a preparation for Matan Torah. There's a Sicha, actually. There's an interesting Sicha, I think, the Chelek Chav Ches, where the Rebbe analyzes this whole thing. Mainly the Rebbe focuses on in the Sicha why when the Gemara describes, when Rashi actually describes the events of each of the days, he says that on Hay Sivan, Moshe built the Mizbeach and brought Korbanos on it. Why don't we mention why does he only mention that he built the Mizbeach and brought the Korbanos on it? Why doesn't he mention that the rest of the events of that day, that he sprinkled the blood on the people, and that the Vayikach Sefer Abris, and et cetera, and a whole bunch of important things happened on the day? Why is he focusing on the Mizbeach and the Korbanos? The gist of it, it's a long and somewhat complicated sikha, but one point that Eber makes in it is that basically Erev Yom Tov partakes already of some of the quality of the Yom Tov. So Erev Shavuos already partakes of some of the quality of Shavuos itself, and therefore, in that sense, it's a fit time already to be bringing it. Not maybe it was after Chatzos, I don't know, it doesn't say, but either way, maybe not for future years. For future years, you have an actual day of Shavuos established on the 6th or on the 50th day of Tzvira Ha'omer, and that's that. But in that year, before Matan Torah, then yeah, the Erev Shavuos already partook something of the quality of the next day when the Torah was going to be given. Anyway, so we see from that Rabbi Yosef Glili obviously holds that it was an Erlus Tomid, because he says that the Re'iyah did not exist before Matan Torah. Now, the Gemara says, going back to Rabbi Shmuel, let's go back to Rabbi Shmuel. You said that Rabbi Shmuel was on the Beis Shammai side of things. Now, we assumed that, but the truth is, it's a little hard to say. We know that Halacha is not like Beis Shammai. We would prefer not to have to say that a Tana holds like Beis Shammai. When the halacha is not like that, Mela Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, Rabbi Eliezer was a member of Beis Shammai anyway, so if he holds like them, big deal. Rabbi Shmuel, my time of Kamok was like a Beis Shammai. Why are you saying that he holds like Beis Shammai? Yeah, let's consider like this. What did we say before? We said that the argument was we use like this. We said that according to Rabbi Shmuel, if you're going to say that the Ola from the day before Matan Torah was an Ola Tamid, so we said, what's the logic that we're going to say that all of a sudden the rules for a change midstream, that you started from Hay Sivan until Rosh Chodesh Nissan, you bring it one way, and then all of a sudden after Rosh Chodesh Nissan, you have to start taking off the skin and cutting it up. What's the logic? But what's the proof from that? We see clearly, Rabbi Yosef Glili clearly says that it was an Olas Tamid. He said so in so many, we inferred that from what he said, because he said the Re'iyah didn't exist. And so what? And we see Rabbi Yosef Glili holds that, yes, the rules changed. That yes, this oila that the Jewish people brought in the desert by the day before Matan Torah did not require hefshir for nituach. They did not have to take off the skin. They did not have to cut it into pieces. Because those rules only apply from oil moed and on. So we see, according to Rabbi Yosef Glili, it's perfectly possible that you have at one, which is long after, it's almost a year later, Rosh Chodesh Nissan. So you see, according to Rabbi Yosef Glili, it's perfectly possible you start bringing an Olas Tamid one way, and then eventually the rules change, and you start bringing it a different way. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, you could say the same thing. I said, you're right. Maybe kind of Rabbi Shmuel, you're right. Take out Rabbi Shmuel from that list. We're down to two that hold that way. Two that hold that it was an Olas Re'iyah, three that hold that it was an Olas Tamid, and okay, Rabbi Shmuel, we can't prove one way or the other. Now, going back to that pasuk that we've been talking about all this time, the one about the Olus and the Shlomim. The full pasuk again. Let's go over the full pasuk. Goes like this: Vayishlach es nare bnei Yisrael, that Moshe sent the young Jewish men. Vayalu oilus, and they offered oilus. Vayizbuchu zvachim shlomim l'Hashem, and they sacrificed. They shechted offerings of shlomim to Hashem. Parim, bull. Now, what do we mean by that? The Gemara is going to ask. What are the bulls? When we say parim, does it refer back to both kinds of korbanos or only the one? Both the oilus and the shlomim. Were both the oilus and the shlomim bulls, or maybe the oilus was a different species of animal, and only the shlomim were bulls. That's boiru chista. Haikra heichiksim. How do we read this pasuk? Vayishlach es nare bnei Yisrael vayalu oilus, and then we would assume that these oilus are kvasim, because if we're saying that it's an oilus tamid, then certainly we would assume that it's kvasim, and even if not, there's no reason particularly to assume it was any particular thing. Vayizbuchu zvachem shlomim l'ashem, and only those were parim. Maybe both kinds of korbanos were parim. So what? Am I Nakamina? What do we need to know that for? It's ancient history, basically. I mean, okay, you know, we're not actually learning anything. We're learning halachas from these korbanos that they brought to a certain extent, but it doesn't matter for purposes of these halachas what kind of animal it was. Yeah. So what do we need to know for? Mazutra amal pesuk taimim. Mazutra says the reason why we need to know how to apply the trust to the pasuk. The way that we have, if we look in a chumash nowadays, we have there's an esnachta on the word olos, which means that the balei amasora, the trust as we have it, determine that the word parim indeed only refers to the last half of the pasuk, because that's what an esnachta breaks the pasuk into two major clauses. Vayishlach es nare bnei Yisrael vayalu oilus is clause one, and then the oilus was some other species of animal. Vayizbuchu zvachim shlomim l'Hashem parim, only the shlomim were parim. As opposed to, Rashi explains, if the word parim actually refers back to both kinds of karbonos, then you need different tref on the pasuk. You need, for example, that instead of the word oilus having an asnachta which breaks the pasuk into two major clauses, you need to have a lesser separating trup there. You need to have, Rashi says, for example, a pashto or a vi. So that you would have, for example, let's say, you know, one way then of parsing the pasuk would be vayishlach es nare bnei Yisrael, period. Vayalu oilus, vayizbuchu zvachim shlomim, l'Hashem parim, and then parim refers back to that entire second half of the sentence, including the oilus and the shlomim. As opposed to when it's having a snacht on oilus, where it means that the oilus are one kind and the shlomim are a different kind. Yeah. There's a very interesting thing in the back of one of the commentaries in the back of Medrash Rabbah has a whole detailed analysis of this Rashi, why exactly he mentions the Tzrop he does, and he mentions because there could actually be four different ways to parse this pasuk. Because on top of this that we're discussing over here, whether the oilus were bulls or whether they were sheep, there's another machlokas in the Zvachim, whether the ones who brought these karbonos were the Nare Bnei Yisrael, the young Jewish men, the Bechorim, or was it already the Kohanim? Maybe it's Vayishlach as Nare Bnei Yisrael to prepare the karbonos, and Vayalu Oilus actually refers to the Kohanim. So he explains that based on that, you come up with four different possible ways to parse the pasuk, and that's why Rashi refers to four different possible trup that the word oilus can have, because depending on how you break up the clauses in the pasuk, you're going to have four different possible sets of trup.
And you read
an asnachta. An asnachta is like a break. Vayishlach es nare bnei Yisrael vayalu oilus.
Oh, yeah.
Vayizbuchu, yeah. Yeah,
it's
like an interruption. Yeah, as opposed to, for example, if we said the Vayishlach is not a Bnei Yisrael, then we might have, for example, Vayishlach is not a Bnei Yisrael, Vayalu Oilos, Vayizbuchu Zvachim Shlomim Lashem Parim, where then Vayalu Oilos until Parim is all one long clause. Yeah. So that's one Nachmina, Marzutra says. We have to know how to apply the Sukkim to the Pasuk. There might have been different Masoris. I think Marashah says that actually they may have forgotten the Masorah. Actually, there's an interesting thing. Actually, there's a sefer of halachas that details many of the halachas of Kriyas HaTorah called Shaarei Ephraim. He says, based on this Gemara, it seems when you're reading that pasuk, even though our Masorah has an asnacht over there on the word oilus, based on our Gemara, since the Gemara concludes with teku over here, that we don't really know the answer. not you shouldn't have an asnachta, but he says don't read it like a regular asnachta. Don't make a real break over there like you would by a normal asnachta. I don't know whether Bali Kri actually do that in practice. I certainly don't, but I'd never heard of this before actually. But this idea of not stopping so much by that asnachta, but I don't know. I'd be interesting to find out, for example, whether Mussel Schusterman, Oliver Shalom, or Yibavul Chaim at Slavin, or whoever, whether they do it. Right, so I'd have to give it a listen to and see, yeah. Anyway, that's one. Rav Acha b'Reid Rava Amar, here's another Nachmina. Lo Omer, Harei Olai Ola, Ka'ola Sheikri V'Yisrael B'Midbar. What about if a person says, I vow to bring an Ola, the kind of Ola that the Jewish people brought in the desert? So my, what would be the din? Parim Havu or Kvasim Havu? Do we tell him he has to bring a bull, or does he have to bring a sheep? Again, depending on how you parse the pasuk. And the answer is Teku. We don't know. So what would the guy do in that case? The Pashtus, maybe we would tell him you have to bring both to be on the safe side.
Hello,
yeah.